Morning, everybody. I'm Luca from the University of Trento. This is a joint work with Vadim Kotov, an ex-colleague of mine, now graduated, and Fabio Massacci, my supervisor. The title for today's talk is Malware Lab, Experimentation with Cybercrime Attack Tools. So let's see what it's going to be about. First, I will introduce you to the Malware Lab. What is it? What are we doing there? Then we will, because the focus of the experiment that I will present today is exploit kits, we will see briefly how do they work, just to be sure that everybody is on the same line. Then I will tell you how did we perform the experiment. I will describe you the experimental infrastructure, give you some results and the conclusions and lesson learned for as a wrap up. So what is the Malware Lab? The Malware Lab is an infrastructure to test malware that we developed at the University of Trento. And we are testing malware as if it was a software artifact. So in the sense of performances or in the sense of capabilities. In particular, in this instance of the Malware Lab experiment, we are testing 10 different exploit kits that have been leaked from the black markets. And we're trying to understand how resilient are they to software updates in time. So for how long do they basically work when they face configurations that update themselves through time? So to see how exploit kits work, this is a very simple diagram. So an exploit kit is nothing but a website that is developed somewhere or deployed somewhere by the attacker, that in the figure will be on the bottom of the slide. And there is a victim user that simply connects to the malicious web server, and all it gets in return is a HTML page that bundles a number of exploits. These can be PDF, malformed PDFs, files, or JavaScript, anything really. When the exploit is on the machine, it runs, and if it is able to exploit any of the vulnerabilities that are on that machine, some malware gets deployed usually on the victim machine, and the computer gets infected. So an exploit kit is nothing but a system to deliver malware, basically. So we're testing exploit kits, and to do that is key to have realistic configurations for the users. So we fix a 6-year time window for the operating systems that we deploy. This is mainly for compatibility reasons, in the sense that trying to install Firefox 12 or Java 6 on Service Pack 0 Windows XP is not possible and would spoil all the automatic experiment, basically, and we would not know anymore what are we measuring, or if the failed installation or the failed exploit. We also fix another time window for the software that can coexist on the same machine. This is to avoid having, for example, Java 1.4 deployed on Firefox 8, because it's a very unlikely configuration. It's just too far away in time, or too apart in time. So we find that a 2-year window for software installations is a reasonable amount of time to have configurations that are reasonable to coexist. Now, the point is that a lot of software is, of course, out there, so exploit kits must be able to deliver the attack to a number of different configurations. So what we are testing here is the resiliency against the evolution of these configurations, and what we're measuring is the successfulness of this exploitation across, indeed, this evolution of software. So how many times the malware gets executed, basically, so it's successfully delivered. So to see more in detail how the experiment is made, the exploit kits that we chose span from 2007 to 2011. We chose them for release date, so we tried to cover as many years as possible, and we covered them all. By popularity, as reported by the Symantec guys in 2011, they released a report on popularity of exploit kits. We tried to pick those that we have that are most popular and common in the wild. And the names that we can find are CrimePack, Hedonor, Bleeding Life, and Shaman. These are all exploit kits that we developed, that we deployed. Software-wise, we're testing all major Microsoft operating systems, from Windows XP to Windows 7, and we treat each service pack as a different deployment of the operating system. This is because a service pack introduces often many security features like DAP or ASLR that, even though they are maybe not activated by default, but we think that it's worth to consider this an independent system. Then, software-wise, we're testing two browsers, Firefox and Internet Explorer, and three different plugins, Flash, Acrobat Reader, and Java. So we collected historical versions of all this software for a total amount of about 250 different versions that go from 2005 to 2013. And then we, using this software, we randomly generate 180 configurations that are for each of the operating systems. Now, and these configurations will be the configurations that are run against exploit kits. Now, of course, manually testing all this complexity is impossible to manage all these configurations for each operating system. Cannot be done manually, so we need something automated, of course. So this is how the infrastructure looks like. We have three victim machines that basically virtualize operating systems. Victim 1 has XP, victim 2 Vista, and victim 3 has 7, each of them with their relative configurations, 180 configurations, and they're all connected via a simple switch to a malware distribution server, we called, where our exploit kits are deployed and our malware is stored. So the first lesson learned here is that experiment runs tend to fail, and especially when you have a number of different systems that operate in an infrastructure concurrently. What you want to have is a number of snapshots that keep track of the status of the whole infrastructure at any given point in time. So if any one of the machine fails, you can just restore the whole thing from that moment, and you're sure that you're not spoiling your results, maybe by measuring twice the same thing and so on. So it's important to keep everything synchronized. We didn't know that, and we lose quite a bit of time first doing it manually, then we saw that an automatic approach is much more convenient. So how does a single run of the experiment look like? So for each of the operating systems, you start from the top, from the configuration selection. So for example, we're testing XP Service Pack 0. So we select a configuration, one of the 180. We check if it is in the 6 years window of that operating system. We install the software automatically. We make a snapshot of that configuration installed, so that every time that we run that configuration against the exploit kits, we are able to restore a perfectly clean version of that configuration. Because, for example, if one run against an exploit kit causes the browser or some plugin to crash, then if you use the same snapshot and run against the exploit kits again, then your results may change. So we just run against every exploit kit, restoring the snapshot cyclically. When we're done with all the kits, we delete the snapshot, and if we're done with all the configurations, we quit the experiment, or we go back to the configuration selection and we start again until we complete it. The lesson learned here is that this square here is a bit of a pain, in the sense that automated software installation, especially when you have to deal with historical archives of software, historical software, is not really trivial. There is no one way to do it simply. Sometimes the MSI installers don't work, especially with older versions of the operating systems and of the applications. And the applications themselves, the command line arguments that you have to pass to the package provided by the vendor, changes a lot. So you really need to keep up with the documentation and try to make everything work. You have to write the commands tailored for each version and be sure that you're actually installing the software so that the arguments are right. Now, to go a bit in more detail into how each victim system looks like, if we enlarge how a victim is, it's basically based on a Linux distribution. We used Ubuntu. We use Linux for convenience, just for scripting reasons. It's much handy to use. We manage the whole experiment in Python, so there are Python scripts that control the VirtualBox interface that virtualizes all the virtual systems that we're testing. And the run looks more or less like this. So the first thing that the script tries to do is to install the first configuration for that operating system. So it passes the installers and executes them on the virtual machine, and you get all your software installed there. So here, for example, you have Firefox and all the plugins. The second command is a check of the installation, because we must be have some evidence that the software is actually deployed on the machine. So we push a file that checks for the installations to be done, and it sends us the results. Then we save the configuration snapshot so that we have a clean snapshot of it all the time. and this closes the installation procedure. Then you restart launching the configuration against all the 10 exploit kits. So you start with restoring the configuration, you launch it against the first exploit kit, you compromise it, then you restore again the configuration, you launch against all the other 9 exploit kits, and you go on like this until you're done with all the 10 different exploit kits. When you are done, all you have to do is delete the snapshot, you go back to the clean configuration of the operating system, and you just go on with like that for the second configuration until the 180th hit, and then you end the experiment. So the lesson learned here is that VirtualBox, in particular, in our experience, tends to fail when you have to restore a huge number of snapshots continuously. So it's not very reliable with that. When you continuously do operations of snapshot, like restoring, deleting, creating continuously, sometimes it just hangs. And so here again, the checkpoints are very important for the continuity of your experiment and not to lose too much time. And also we found that empirically, if you give the shell some time in between different restores or different operations on the snapshot, it makes things a little bit better. So maybe it's worth to wait a few seconds in between every run rather than just go straight with it. This makes it a bit easier to manage. Then there is a point actually that I would like feedback from you if you have any. So of course it's a big problem to be sure that each configuration is properly installed. This is because we're measuring for successful round exploitation, right? So there may be two reasons why the exploitation fails. One is because the vulnerability is not there, so the exploit kit is not capable of exploiting that software, or maybe because the exploit kit is not good, so the exploit is simply a bad piece of code or bad piece of software, so it's not capable of exploiting the vulnerability even if it is there. So knowing exactly what software we're testing in that particular run of the experiment is very important. So what we are doing now is that we check for known post-installation files on the system. So we know that installing Firefox or installing Flash will create certain files on the file system, and we check if these are there after the installation is supposed to be completed, then we mark that installation as successful. Now this is prone to a number of false positive and possibly false negatives because the simple presence of the file may not mean that the plugin or the software actually works. Or also false negatives because maybe the software works perfectly but the files are in some other location, maybe moved, but maybe Firefox moves some version of some file of Flash in some directory that he manages directly. So with this method, our installations were marked mostly successful most of the time. The only problem we had was with Flash that was about 80% of the time successful. So in our results, the Flash configurations may be a bit underrepresented here. So if you have suggestions on how to do that, they're more than welcome, really, because it would be a great value for us. Yes? No, we don't know really, because we don't know whether if it is a false negative, because this we have the data after the experiment completed, basically. So rolling back to the configuration was something that we didn't do to check if the Flash was not there or not. So checking for the false negative would be interesting for us later. But
success is just exit value installer.
Yeah, but then maybe, you know, you install Flash and it's not, or maybe you install Java, but it's not ticked in, it's not enabled in Internet Explorer 6. So you have it there, the installer said, yeah, I'm there, but Internet Explorer doesn't use it. So when you run Internet Explorer with Java, you think that Java is there, and your exploit kit, you think that it's attacking it, but actually it's not running. So you're not measuring the right thing. That's a problem. Yes?
So what if you just write your own? If it was successfully installed, it raises some signals, so you know.
So we you suggest to write our own Flash?
Write your own Flash app, just like a little web page where you where Flash is installed.
And then test for it. Yes. Okay. This can be a good idea. We did it manually at the beginning, but then we didn't include. But this is actually we can automatize it. That could be done. Yes. Thanks.
Good question. Are you checking for pulse displays as well? Where are you checking?
Excuse me.
Where are you checking for pulse displays as well?
On the file system of the operating system that is virtualized, that gets the plugins installed. Yes, just looking for the presence of the file, simply. If the Flash plugin is there in C, internet plugins, that's it. Nothing else? Okay. So, how do we assess if the exploit was successful? So again, this is the network, typical network request to our malware distribution server. So what it happens is when the victim connects there, the malware sends the exploit gets successful and requests a particular malware that we wrote, that is Casper down there in the bottom right corner. And all this malware does is that when it's deployed on the machine, all it does is executes himself and sends us back one. Just say, hey, I was executed, so the exploitation was successful. So we use this one as a marker for the successfulness of the exploitation of the exploit kit. So the results, this is a graph of how the infections went for all the time windows that we considered. Here you see the volumes of the exploitation for each exploit kit. In the first, here you see MPAC, GPAC, El Fiesta, ADPAC, ISPAC, and SEO. These are all exploit kits that perform exactly the same one like the other. We mark these, we say that these are a bit lousy exploit kits because they look like they're all using the same exploits. So maybe it's actually exactly the same kit, but with the same author that just rebrands it on and on. Or maybe they're all different kits that just take the exploits from the same source, or maybe from Metasploit, or stuff like that. Still, we consider them to be lousy, but they are working for more than 4 years. So exploit kits that are in the black markets, even though they're not big quality with respect to the others, they do work for quite some time. The second group that I would like you to focus on is CrimePak and Shaman there. These we classify as long-term exploit kits in the sense that they achieve a higher number of exploitations in general, so the quality is higher, but they're able to keep up the number of exploitations in time. Actually, they're operating for more than 8 years, these exploit kits. So they still are able to infect the machines after 8 years. And finally, the last group is Eleanor and Bleeding Life. These two don't achieve a remarkably amount of infections throughout all the time windows. But when they're active, they're extremely active. Like, they're very good at exploiting machines. This is particularly evident with Bleeding Life. So at the beginning, it's worse than the lousy kids, but around its release time, which was 2010, you see that it just spikes and it's able to exploit a big number of vulnerabilities. Yes?
How come it goes to zero in 2011?
Because it's not able to exploit anymore. It just stops. Actually, the last infection that we saw was in 2012.
So by this rash, do you feel secure?
No. No, I mean, this means that basically software updates are not enough, strangely enough, because there are like foundational vulnerabilities that you cannot just patch by updating the software and so on. The operating system is a big variable, and overall, there is always one vulnerability that these guys are able. So they're good at making the exploit kits. They're putting the right exploits there.
If your set of malware that you're testing here kind of all fades to zero, like modern times, like how do you account for that lack of diversity? It's clear malware is still working out there.
I mean, you don't have to interpret, if I get right your question. This doesn't mean that in 2013 infections are over.
Sure. What about more diversity in malware, like finding more exploit kits?
Oh, yeah, well, we have many. We have 40 of them, but we were able to deploy only 10 of them because, some of them are encrypted or some of them are actually incomplete. So, yes. So we... we try to deploy those that we are sure they are working and that we know good enough not to infect the whole network of the university of our own computers, basically. Yes, also back there, sorry.
It seems like one of the takeaways would be this, further supports the assertion that a lot of vulnerabilities are attack machines that have not patched available.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the English.
We don't patch our computers.
We don't patch our computers. Well, but in this experiment, we do patch the computers. I mean,
you do, but in the real world.
And so it's even worse. No, because here, you know, we are generating as many configurations that are typically attacked by the exploit kits by mixing up the plugins and so on with many different versions. So actually, yes, you're right. We are patching software continuously, actually 180 different times per operating system. So 30 times a year, basically. And this is way more than what my mother does. So I should call home, probably. Yeah, actually, it's basically over.
Great. Questions?
No, I can sum up the results if you want. I can sum, very briefly, so I will leave place to you. Short terms, exploit kits, they are very good at exploiting machines in a short period of time, but they're not very good in the long period. Long terms is the other way around. And lousy kits, they kind of like borrow exploitation code from other exploit kits, or in general, they're not very good. But still, they are able to infect us for more than 4 years. Lesson learned, a brief summary that was very valuable to us. Experiment runs really fail. It's very hard to keep an experiment go on for more than 2 weeks, which is the length of this one. Sometimes you have problems, so checkpoints are very useful to get it clean. The installers, in our experience, are not that trustworthy. Not trustworthy, just that in time they change a lot, so you need a lot of documentation if you want to deploy malware software versions reliably. And finally, VirtualBox looks like it's not really made to keep restoring stuff, so giving it some time and using checkpoints is also good for your health. So if you have questions, this is Liz.
So I'm interested in the positive slope here. So my understanding is for each of these exploit kits, the exploits remain consistent. You're going to modify it.
No.
So between like what you're saying is as the machines are patching and upgrading their software, they're becoming more vulnerable in the case of leaking by the top until 2009.
Yes, sir. Yes, so this is a twofold answer. So on one case, some exploit kits, what they do is they check the software version that is there. So maybe they don't know that a particular vulnerability exists in an older version, but this is only one side of the coin, then there is the other. So maybe they don't know that the vulnerability is there, so they just don't attack it because it's Firefox 8 and not Firefox 9. Maybe the vulnerability is there, but he doesn't know it, so he doesn't do anything. This they do for, you know, not getting too much noise around. But on the other end, updates themselves introduce a whole lot of vulnerability bugs. Otherwise, by now, we would be over with vulnerabilities. We're not. You introduce new features, new code. Maybe you fix older vulnerabilities, introducing new vulnerabilities. And these are the vulnerabilities that caused the big spike in the attacks that Breathing Life is able to do. Simply because these vulnerabilities here were not existent and were introduced with newer versions of Firefox, Flash, or anything else.
Is testing one intake of each of the exploit kits? Like there's one sample that was leaked in January 2009. You're using that in both for the 2005 all the way to the 2013. Is that correct?
It is correct. Okay. If my understanding of vintage is correct.
Yeah, what is it?
Yes, yeah. It is. It is,
you're testing one snapshot. So when is the snapshot of the bleeding light?
2010, January 2010.
Okay.
It's exactly there. It was made to exploit vulnerabilities around its time period. So its customers are like, whoa, I can exploit a whole lot of computers, very recent ones. Well, Eleanor actually was released much later.
So it's less likely to exploit the older ones know that that configuration likely exists in the wild to a certain extent.
Yes. So, okay. It's possible. Yes.
Two questions. One is regarding the granularity in terms of installation and the checkpoints. What is the granularity? Just the software level or like some final granularity? The second question is regarding the automated execution. To what extent are you really executing all those attacks and everything online? Or you just Python script and it just allows the UDN and the
manager. I'm sorry, can you reformulate both the questions? I didn't get it.
Sorry. The first question is the granularity. Only on the software level, right? Firefox, that version does it.
Yes.
Okay. What about checkpoints?
Checkpoints are actually managed by Python. The checkpoints will represent the structure of the state of the infrastructure.
I see.
When it's then in place, that one.
I see.
What
about the automated execution?
The automated execution?
For this automated execution, I understand how Python manages those VBOS.
Yes.
But are you really using the, are you really automating the attacks from those deployed kits, right? You go through all those deployed and so forth, you write a script and automatically attack one by one, or what is the, you know, the degree that you really achieve all through execution?
So the granularity of the execution for each configuration against every expert kit, this is it.
Right.
So yes, we run every single configuration against every expert kit that we have. The experiment phase, we restore the IP addresses, the tables, and so on about every computer. We have Python. And I don't understand what
it's. So it's a full suite of every exploit, of every machine, every configuration.
Yes. Yes, everything is wrong. But luckily in this code, you only need to connect to the web page of the mother distribution server. So that's
actually the web page. Thank you.
One more question. Have you got any observations maybe of popularity and or pricing of these toolkits on the black market as they correspond to the efficacy?
Yeah, so we do have this data. We are looking at it. Eero was about $1,500 per month. Baby Life was more or less the same price. The others were expected, they were not really good. About $200-$500, depending. Crankup, I think, is a $2,000. So the prices are actually more or less around the same, which is not, the variance is not really high. Then, of course, you have some kits that are $2,000 per week, and these things differ. So, quite maybe harder than Crankup.
What did you learn about the quality of the software? Last longer or not last longer? For instance, do the kits that last longer have more exploits, or was the quality of the exploits higher?
No, the number of exploits is basically constant throughout all of them. Those that are the bit that you classify as the housing are more like the 7 or 8 exploits. The others are about 10, but it doesn't vary greatly. All the exploits that we have are about 10 each.
All right, let's thanks.